Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, grab a beer, kick back, have a whiskey, because getting drunk in the sunshine is just like college again. Nick Gillespie from Reason TV.
Hi, thanks for having me, and I want to especially thank John and Mike Krause and everybody at the Independence Institute. This is great to be here. I have recently today, this was the first time I shot a gun, and it may well be the last, but I had trouble even hitting the ground. I have two sons, but with the shooting I showed today, it's amazing that I'm a father at all. I don't need to check the paternity. Before I start my remarks, I'll also, for those of you who still have them, you might want to put your earplugs in. Well, I'm glad to be at an event that is dedicated to, as I was told, enjoying freedoms, the freedoms while we still have them, because certainly freedoms and nanny state freedoms, the freedoms to have, a bit of fun, seem to be disappearing in this country faster than Obama's approval rating. What I want to do today is I want to give you some examples of nanny statism from around the country, suggest the causes of its growth, and then also sketch out some ways to defeat it. And mostly I want to talk fast. I'm from New Jersey originally, so we get to the Q&A and then I can get to the bar. So how bad are things? Consider this tidbit from this grim story from April 2010. At this year's White House Easter egg roll, candy was banned. No peeps, no jelly beans, no chocolate bunnies, and in their place, unsuspecting kids got to hang out with hand-washing stations, something called pre-screened fruits, and exercise stations as well, rather than hunting for Easter eggs and candy. This is not a good sign, In the city of San Francisco, which, where do you start there? The mayor, Gavin Newsom, last year he ordered an audit of unused land, including median strips on roads, for organic farming. That would be done by and for community groups where homeless people could either grow food or eat food or, I suspect, mostly fertilize food. In Gavin Newsom City Hall, donuts are banned. At city meetings, bagels are to be halved or quartered. City Hall vending machines cannot stock soda, but they can stock whole milk or soy milk. And this is despite the fact that whole milk and soy milk oftentimes have more calories than a regular can of Coca-Cola. The city's commission for animal control and welfare is now considering a law that would ban sales of what are called companion animals in San Franciscoese. We know them better as pets. This would include banning sales of dogs, cats, chinchillas, birds, snakes, lizards, goldfish, and other small tropical fish would be exempt from the ban. So if any of you remember the 60s at all, if you're going to San Francisco, be sure to wear some flowers in your hair and to bring your own stash of uncut bagels, Coca-Cola, and chinchillas. On the other side of the country, where I'm from, actually, I was born in Brooklyn, there's Mayor Mike Bloomberg of New York, who Reason TV, which is online at reason.tv, and if I haven't mentioned it, it's online at reason.tv. and reason.com, but we named Mike Bloomberg our Nanny of the Year for 2009. Each month, we do a Nanny of the Month, and then Mayor Mike was our Nanny of the Year for 2009. This is the man who famously banned trans fat and indoor smoking. He's now working on an outdoor smoking ban, as well as a war on salt. His language, a war on salt. And he's advocated sin taxes on soda pop. I don't know, what do people call it out here? In New York, it's soda. In Ohio, it's pop. But you know what I mean, right? You know when you say, yeah, you call it beer. And he has also worked, minions in his administration have effectively banned school bake sales because sweets are bad for kids. Which reminds me of the bumper sticker that I want to create. We all know the old bumper sticker, "It'll be a beautiful day when the schools have all the money they need and the Air Force has to hold a bake sale to build a bomber." My bumper sticker would be, "It will be a beautiful day when the Air Force bombs all the schools having bake sales." So all of these examples share at least two things in common. They treat us like children, and they reduce our choices, sometimes radically. And we can talk about the funny examples. Another one from upstate New York, a legislator has gone about trying to ban fish pedicures. Has anyone here ever had a fish pedicure? Okay, it's where you put your feet, and by the way, you put your feet in a tank full of little fish that nibble at your toes. I understand that there's also a Brazilian wax variant, which is not recommended, but they are supposed to, the fish nibble dead skin and do okay. There has never in New York, it's a big thing in a salon business, particularly immigrants, Asian immigrants, shop owners, it's very big there, where you can go in whole pools where you get a whole body pedicure. Although I guess it wouldn't be a pedicure depending on what part of the body they're nibbling on. But in any case, so a legislator wants to ban fish pedicures despite acknowledging that there have been no complaints about the procedure. So, you know, this is it's a stunning thing. So these things all treat us like choices and they reduce our choices, sometimes radically. You know, and it's something silly, really, like fish pedicures. I know, I was on the John Stossel's Fox Business show where I got a fish pedicure on TV, but I had lived, I think, 45 years without a fish pedicure, and I can survive without fish pedicures. But it's not just about the little things. The same impulse that is about limiting our choices and treating us like children on silly things, maybe, is also behind massive takeovers of basic human rights and basic dignities. And we see this in schemes like the new financial regulations that just passed the Senate and will become law within a couple weeks, and especially Obamacare. When you look, if you follow the financial regulation reforms that were just passed by Congress, the whole goal in the end, and particularly at the consumer level, we're not even talking about the big banks and the so-called banks and the banks that are too big to fail, so we'll keep them small enough so that they don't have to fail, so we can bail them out when they get too big to fail because the regulations didn't work. All of that, I'm just talking about in terms of credit cards. For instance, part of what will be created out of these new financial regulations are rules that restrict the range and possibility of credit institutions, credit things you can do. Your credit card choices are going all in the name of protecting you from being too stupid to know when you're spending yourself into oblivion. And here the government might be projecting a little bit. But they're going to radically reduce the choices of options that you have as when you go to the store. It's not a good thing. When you think about something like Obamacare, I mean, I think we could talk a lot about that, and it is—it's a manifestation of a nanny statism, but it's the mandate dimension in particular. And I know that the Independent Institute is working hard to really challenge that mandate, and I think it's a good thing—the idea that you must do this if you are a member of this society. We will force you to do things our way, or it's the highway for you. It'll set uniform limits or restrict the variety of choices that healthcare providers will be able to do. This is a bad thing. This sort of one-size-fits-all that is always a solution, one-size-fits-all or one-size-fits-almost-all of us solution, is really the final destination of the nanny state. And what's particularly ironic about it, yeah, I was like, I forgot where I am. Hello, Los Angeles. But it is, it's the final, you know, conclusion of the logic embedded in the nanny state. And what's most bizarre about it is that it comes immediately or exactly at a point in time where we're experiencing a massive proliferation in consumer and lifestyle choices. I mean, when you think about, you know, the way that you watch TV now, the way that, you know, there are 27 Pop-Tarts. I have a fixation on Pop-Tarts. They were introduced in the mid-60s. There were three types. There are now 27 types of Pop-Tarts. When you go to the grocery store, one of the things I love to do is to go to produce sections and wander around and look at stuff that I have never seen before that has little stickers on it that tell you what it is and how to eat it. This is an incredible world, and it's a world of proliferating choice, proliferating produce, proliferating individual types. I'm a big fan of a character, an anthropologist named Grant McCracken, who talks about what he calls plenitude, or the quickening speciation of social types in North America. And he went to high school in the late 50s, early 60s, and he said, you know, if you were a guy, you were either a jock, a nerd, or a hood. In the 90s, in Toronto, he went around to a mall with a kid who was like, okay, there's a skater, there's a punk, there's a goth, there's a gay skater goth punk, and it's like Pop-Tarts. I mean, this is the whole point, is that exactly at the moment when the state is trying to say, no, you can only do this one way, in every other parts of, all of the good parts of our lives, what we're being told is, hey, you know what, mix and match. Go to Starbucks and order one of literally a million or more coffee drinks by mixing together whatever you want. So the nanny state impulse, you know, this one-size-fits-all impulse is totally out of step with our lives, yet it seems to be gaining ground. And this is, you know, it's worth asking why. I've got two possible causes that I'll throw out here. And the first one, or both of them, what they share in common is that we are all part of the problem. Okay, you know, it's kind of a tragic comedy of American life that we get the government we deserve. So, I mean, this is, and you know, if we believe in individual responsibility, we have to take responsibility for the world we live in and the stupid politicians that we swear we never vote for but somehow keep getting reelected. But we're part of the problem, and one of the reasons why we might be glomming on to nanny statism and the, you know, bizarre and typically unscientific attempts to reduce any sort of risk. You know, when you look at assault ban, and not an assault weapon ban, a ban on table salt, there is no scientific reason, you know, there's no good medical reason to do that. Some people react poorly to salt, most do not. It shouldn't be, you know, it's bad science. Trans fat, a couple years ago when trans fat bans were all the rage, I debated somebody who, trans fats, if you know, they were brought in to replace really evil tropical oils, palm oil and things like that. I was on a radio show with a person who had helped make the shift from tropical oils to trans fat as a health issue, and now was back saying, you know what, trans fats are bad. We need to get to something like tropical oils. I mean, the science on a lot of these issues is pretty dubious, but beyond that. We are part of the problem because we're trying to reduce risk. We're trying to make things. We're being conservative in all the wrong ways, trying to make sure we don't lose anything. And I think part of it is because we're too rich. We're too rich as individuals. We're too rich as societies. We feel like we have too much to lose. All of you who are parents, you know, one of the things I can think about, and this is a totally understandable impulse, but a couple of years ago, I wrote a story for Reason Magazine, and I started by telling an anecdote about I was dropping my kid off. I was living at the time in Huntsville, Texas, a prison town. I guess I was a trustee. They let me out during the day of the prison. But I was dropping my son off. He was, I don't know, 4 years old at the time in a daycare center, and I was coming into the driveway, and I saw something that made me slam on my brakes and almost, like, freak out. And it was a car pulling in that had a bunch of kids jumping up and down in the front seat and on the back, and one of the kids was like laying down in that flat part on the back seat of the car, and I hit the brakes and I was like, what kind of freaking parent would allow their kids to be doing that? And then I thought for a second and I was like, well, my parents. And all of the parents I knew, you know, and I grew up with parents who, they wouldn't let you roll the windows down in the car because they were smoking and they didn't want the smoke to escape. But so, you know, whatever else you can say, you know, there's no question that seatbelts save lives. I don't think they should be mandatory, but they save lives. But, you know, we all buckle up now, pretty much. And we don't buckle up because we're afraid of the law. We buckle up because, you know, our attitudes have changed. But part of it is we feel like we have more to lose because we're rich. You know, poor people don't worry too much about, you know, when you ain't got nothing, you got nothing to lose, right? When you're doing okay, you start to worry. So maybe we as a society just might feel scared of what we might lose. So we put up with all sorts of restrictions. Yeah, one solution to that would be, and I think we might be far enough down this road that it's a reality, we can become poor again. And then then suddenly we'll start rebelling against the nanny state. But I don't think that that's going to work as well. And I think, another reason, or another way to deal with this is to push back against the forces of control. And, you know, part of it can be done through attacking the bad science or the bad logic You know, sometimes in specific cases, something like the salt ban, something like trans fat, where it's just bad science or it's bogus, but also the logic of control. And this is going to be hard to do. A couple of years ago, we interviewed at Reason, we interviewed Anthony Bourdain, the travel writer and food critic who's on does No Reservations. And he was telling a story. He was a committed smoker. I think he's quit by now. But he said he knew that smoking bans, it was a lost cause fighting against smoking bans when he went to Belfast. And he went to a bar where IRA thugs, you know, criminals hang out, and they would leave the bar to go outside to smoke. And he was like, okay, you know what? We're not repealing smoking bans anytime soon. But, you know, but it's there. It's hard. It's tough. But we need to push back at that. You know, and it happens sometimes, you know, in another kind of Bourdain-related thing. There was a foie gras ban in Chicago that got repealed effectively. It was first ignored and then repealed. It's kind of a variation, I think, on what Gandhi used to say of how first they ignore you, then they ridicule you, then they join you, or maybe they assassinate you. I'm not sure. But in any case, you can eat foie gras now in Chicago, and that's a good thing. At the heart of the nanny state project, in the end, and this is really how I think we have to take personal responsibility, all of us in this tent, you know, and all of us throughout in our daily lives, we have to take personal responsibility to battle the contempt for the foundational American, belief in what John was talking about, in pluralism and tolerance. This belief depends on a keen appreciation of the individual's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You know, the basic idea is that if you want to read the Bible and I want to watch South Park, the only way we can get along is by agreeing to disagree. And that with few exceptions, nobody should be forced to do something they don't want to do. Or to submit to another person's idea of the good life. One of the fears that people have, and this is something if you read 17th century British history, and I'm sure all of you came from, you know, an early morning session from a 17th century British history class to come and shoot guns. And believe me, the guns helped a lot in the 17th century. But you know, the idea was that if you allowed everybody to worship the god that they wanted to, there would be pandemonium, or nobody would get along, or whatever. The discussion would end because you wouldn't have to talk to anybody you didn't agree with. We know that that's not true. Wouldn't be the end if we actually went back to this idea of tolerance, that you know, we're a society of individuals and groups of individuals who have very different beliefs on fundamental values, on things that matter a lot to us, and that's why we want to restrict the political sphere of activity, where 51% of the vote can screw the other 49%. We want to limit that to as small an area as possible, and only when it's absolutely necessary. This will become, you know, it won't end conversation. It'll mean that in order to get your way, you're going to have to persuade somebody rather than coerce them, whether we're talking about trans fat or we're talking about universal mandates for healthcare that have a very good chance of bankrupting the country and a very poor chance of actually upping the level of healthcare. So one of the things that I would like to do is to suggest just at the end, and then we'll go to questions, is that we all take responsibility to be annoying pains in the asses. I suspect that many of you, you know, you are up to this challenge. But, you know, whether it's in the grocery aisle, whether it's on the beaches, you know, on the shores, whatever, argue against the petty aspects of the nanny state and all its manifestations, and also the large ones. Do things like what the Independence Institute is doing, where they're taking their fight, you know, to the ballot box, where it rightly deserves to be. Teach your children, and I'll end with this, and I think it's important that you teach your children to be responsible adults, and that at the same time we insist to our legislators that they treat us as responsible adults.